This is Risky Business News, podcast dedicated to daily cybersecurity news, read and prepared by Catalin Campano. We start today's show with the news that US officials have asked General Paul Nakasone to remain in charge of both the NSA and US Cyber Command for at least one more year. General Nakasone, who has been in charge of both agencies since 2019, has indicated to close sources that he'd agree to the extension, the record reported, citing sources close to the US official. The news of General Nakasone's extension also comes after the general attended a roundtable discussion at Vanderbilt University on Wednesday. At the discussion, General Nakasone said that Cyber Command conducted 9 Hunt Forward missions last year. These missions involved deploying staff in allied countries to help them identify adversaries in their networks. Nakasone said that one of these missions took place in Ukraine last year, and that the agency is still executing these types of missions, with the most recent one taking place in Lithuania. In total, General Nakasone said that Cyber Command conducted 28 such missions in 16 different countries over the last 4 years, a sign of the agency's growing role in countering foreign nation-state threats. In related US government cyber news, the White House issued a memorandum on Wednesday ordering federal agencies to prepare for a future where quantum computers will be able to break common cryptography algorithms. The White House tasked CISA, the NSA, and NIST to create an inventory of currently used cryptographic systems and look for quantum-resistant alternatives, including solutions from the private sector. US officials made the move this week after several news reports last month suggested that China had taken the lead in quantum computing development and was close to breaking common cryptography. Also in cyber policy news, South Korea's intelligence agency said on Thursday that the country has joined a cyber defense group under the NATO alliance, becoming its first Asian member country. The National Intelligence Service said that South Korea, along with Canada and Luxembourg, have been admitted into the NATO Cooperative Cyber Defense Center of Excellence, a think tank based in Tallinn, Estonia, that supports member nations and NATO with interdisciplinary cyber defense research training and exercises. Moving on to hacks and breaches, we also have a report that the Lockbit ransomware gang has bragged this week that they successfully breached and encrypted files on the network of the Bulgarian government agency responsible for refugees management. While the Lockbit gang is believed to have ties with Russia and while Bulgaria hosts Ukrainian refugees, there is currently no evidence to suggest the attack is politically motivated and more than your typical ransomware extortion attempt. And since we're on the topic of the Russian-Ukrainian war, it appears that Ukraine's IT army has scored another win after instructing its members earlier this week to attack a Russian government system known as EGAIS, a system used by the Russian government to control and regulate alcohol production across the country. According to several reports in Russian media, the DDoS attacks were indeed successful and brought the system down for days, which forced some beer factories to shut down to avoid supply chain and overstocking issues. Unfortunately, we also have some bad news for Heroku customers after the company admitted on Thursday that the threat actor who gained access to their internal network back in April also managed to gain access to a database that stored hashed and salted passwords for Heroku customer accounts. The Heroku breach was initially disclosed by GitHub, who in early April said that a threat actor had used both Travis CI and Heroku auth tokens to access GitHub customer accounts and search for their source code. Heroku has been heavily criticized since then because it did not reveal additional details about the attack. Even more, earlier this week, it also started resetting user passwords, but without telling customers why until this first day when it revealed that passwords were also exposed. While not related to its security breach last month, GitHub also made an important security announcement this week. The company said on Wednesday that it would require all developers who contribute code on GitHub to enable a form of two-factor authentication by the end of 2023. The new security measure is meant to prevent situations where a threat actor gains access to a GitHub account and almost immediately starts contributing malicious code to legitimate projects. GitHub said that only 16.5% of current GitHub users have 2FA enabled, which is in itself a large adoption rate compared to, for example, Twitter, where only 2.3% of users have 2FA enabled. And on the same authentication front, we have major news coming out of Apple, Google, and Microsoft, with All3 announcing on Thursday plans to expand support for FIDO standards inside their core products. This means broader support for passwordless logins in the operating systems of All3 companies. At a technical level, support for passwordless logins will mean that devices from the three companies will be able to handle a FIDO signing credential, often referred to as a passkey, that will be stored on their devices. This passkey will be used when users want to sign in or log into a mobile app or website. Instead of a password, the devices will provide this cryptographic secure passkey instead. The FIDO Alliance said that the passkey wouldn't be shared unless the users prove they are in control of the device by authenticating via a PIN, a face scan, fingerprint, or even with another nearby device, such as a smartphone. In a press release, the FIDO Alliance said that it expects Apple, Google, and Microsoft devices to support these new FIDO passkeys within the next year. In terms of technical reports published since our last podcast, we have a very interesting one coming from Mandiant, who published an analysis of a threat actor they are tracking as UNC2903. Mandiant says this threat actor is using vulnerabilities in public-facing applications to gain access to AVS instances, from where it uses an AVS API known as the Instance Metadata Service, or IMDS, which it queries for information on other nearby hosts and even access keys for some systems. If these queries are successful, the threat actor then uses this information to move laterally inside a network. Mandiant says this issue is only exploitable on version 1 of the API, with version 2 receiving better security. Nevertheless, the technique is being exploited because Amazon still provisions new AVS EC2 clusters with the old API, exposing systems to attacks. The Mandiant report contains instructions on how to check AVS infrastructure for the older IMDS API, and recommends updating to the latest API version as a protective measure. Other interesting technical reports published this week also come from Kaspersky and CrowdStrike. For starters, Kaspersky researchers said they found the first case where a malware group used Windows event logs to store payload as part of their infection chain. Second, CrowdStrike said that it found evidence to suggest that members of the Ukrainian IT army were hijacking Docker servers to carry out DDoS attacks against targets in Belarus and Russia. As for APT research, Cyber Reason researchers published a report on Wednesday about a Chinese threat actor that has been active since 2019 and which the company said has engaged in extensive espionage and intellectual property thefts from technology and manufacturing companies located in North America, Europe, and Asia. Cyber Reason called the APT and its operation as cuckoo bees. We also had some drama on the criminal underground, where an individual shared credentials on an underground forum for the Hive ransomware as a service portal. The leaker appears to be a former Hive affiliate who shared the credentials after not receiving payments for four attacks they carried out on behalf of the Hive gang. The account was suspended hours later, but provided threat analysts with a quick look at the Hive backend. And last in our news today, we have a report from the FBI, which published on Wednesday updated stats for losses caused by business email compromise attacks. According to the agency, its Internet Crime Center received reports of more than $43 billion US dollars lost to BEC scams between June 2016 and December 2021, a number that many experts believe is only a subset of the actual losses, since many international victims don't report these types of incidents to the FBI. In light of the report, Risky Business News asked Ronnie Tokazowski, Principal Threat Advisor at Cofence and a resident BEC crime expert, to comment on the recent trends he's seeing in the BEC ecosystem and what should companies and employees be aware of.
Yeah, so I would say one of the biggest ones that we're seeing is, or the two biggest ones would be gift cards and payroll diversions. Specifically with gift cards, like they're continuously here. And with the way the gift cards work is they'll usually say, hey, I need you to run this task for me or go run this errand. And they'll try to move a lot of the conversations off of email over to like SMS. So they'll say like, hey, where's your WhatsApp account? And then they'll converse back and forth with the victim directly. So that's one that we see a good bit. And then the second one, payroll diversions. And those are like the direct deposit scams where they're like, hey, I need you to update my payroll. And then your organizations will go and be like, okay, let's update your payroll and give me your bank account through email and we'll update it. So those are the two big ones that I've seen that are, again, still kind of gaping holes that are just there that people need to be aware of.
We also asked Ronnie if BC scams are a Nigerian exclusive as they once used to be.
So for the countries that are hotbeds of business email compromise, the best way to look at that is look at like wherever like Black Axe operates or any of the other fraternities operate. Like I know Black Axe has a really big presence down like South Africa. So that's one country that does a lot too.
The FBI also said that many of these groups launder their stolen funds through China. Ronnie explains why.
I would say probably because, again, probably the laws over there would be either more lax or when it comes to money laundering, it would be more effective and less likely to be stopped than coming from here. Because again, if they're hitting a target here in the United States and then money gets wired over there within the United States, there are certain rules and regulations that law enforcement can use, whereas those relationships may not be as solid over there in China. I know that from a geopolitical perspective, the relationship with the United States and China isn't really the best. So when it comes to collaboration, it would probably fall down.
This is it for today's news. You can find links to all reports in our newsletter at riskybiznews.substack.com.